It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Yes, they are. Sandy Rios with you, and that's what we're doing. We're fighting for some of those things that are worth fighting for. I'm just so happy to have you with me this morning. I hope that you watched or had a chance to watch part of the Republican convention last night. And because it starts so late, I have asked Adam to pull out several segments of it that I think will be encouraging to you. And we're going to spend a lot of the show today talking about that and sharing some of these stories. The stories were just off the charts. People's stories about what's happened to them and how it's not just about President Trump, but it's about his policies and how things have intersected their lives and changed their lives. All of them powerful testimonies. So I want a chance to share that with you. Last night, of course, in Kenosha, riots, second night in a row. Kenosha is a beautiful little town. You know, it's just a beautiful little town, and they're burning it down. They're burning churches. They're burning places that sell cars. They're burning all the cars. They're burning down buildings. They're destroying and looting because the police shot a black man. You can see the very short video of them shooting him as he's getting in his car. The two of them are chasing after him. We don't know what the circumstances are. And the governor of Tony Evers of Wisconsin weighed in, you know, talking about it being racism, which was just deadly. Because it's like permission and permission for people to riot when they don't really know what the story was there, how much of a danger that guy was. We have no idea. It wasn't like the killing in Minnesota. That was, we could see it with our own eyes. This, we saw the shooting, but we did not see the context. And so Kenosha, that beautiful little clean town, is in terrible trouble. And of course, in Portland, more rioting and all over the country. And this is what we get every single day. And that's why I think it's good this morning if we share some of what happened at the convention last night, because it is that other side of America which wants to fight back and stop this. So with that, I want to play for you how the convention opened last night, because this is what it sounded like. Even with just listening to it, it has impact. Let's listen.
We come together tonight to imagine a future determined by the shining light of our hopes and values and faith. A country where we are judged by our character with dignity and respect for all. The belief that all are created equal, that lives matter irrespective of race, creed, or color. Committed to excelling beyond our dreams, limited only by our imaginations, where rugged individualism and American exceptionalism inspire the best in each of us.
Lift off.
And when we see injustice to one, we act to fix it for all. This is our story. We journey together. We stand in the breach to preserve a way of life that, while imperfect, has brought prosperity, honor, and dignity to generations past and will for generations to come. 4 years ago, we faced an historic crossroad. Career politicians promising change every election, but delivering emptiness. We chose a different path. A man who is not a politician. A man who cares. A man who loves America and all Americans. A man who works tirelessly for you. Even tonight, during this nomination. The results? Jobs were created, embracing the undeniable greatness of diversity. Prosperity, safe communities, protecting and serving, caring for one another. Still, politicians spun their deceptions and obstructed progress. fanning the flames of lawlessness. We all know that it is easy to criticize. It takes a true leader to solve problems. COVID-19. While others criticized without solutions, President Trump's swift action saved lives. And as leading Democrats want to keep businesses closed down, our president is leading the way for a full economic recovery. We are America. Despite unpredictable events, we as Americans work together to overcome challenges, write our own stories. The legends for our posterity. America. Land of promise. Land of opportunity. Land of heroes. Land of greatness. Join us over the next four nights as we write the next chapter of our journey and share our vision as the greatest country with the greatest citizens that attain the greatest achievements.
All right, that's how it started last night, the Republican convention, and after that it panned to Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's the of course, the cardinal of the Catholic Church in the New York Diocese, and he prayed for the nation. He prayed for both parties. He prayed for both candidates, and it was a really powerful opening. Now, look, you can design a package. You can make, you know, a piece of cheese look like a hero if you, you know, play the right music and have the right announcer. So I think the question in Americans' minds should be and is, what is true here? What is true? What can we believe? Is Joe Biden the hero, the humanitarian that the Democrats said last week, or is President Trump the selfish, racist bigot that's been presented among other adjectives? Or, you know, what is the truth here? We kind of need to know, don't we? So they started the convention with a series of testimonies from people. I call it testimonies, talking about their personal experiences with Donald Trump. And it was pretty interesting. And I think that it would be really powerful for you to listen as well. Herschel Walker was one of them. Herschel is just such a sweet guy. Every time he's interviewed, he says, I love my Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. But he's a football player. He played for the Dallas Cowboys. He played for the Minnesota Vikings, the Philadelphia Eagles, the New York Giants. He's been playing football for a long time. He has known President Trump for a long time. And his testimony was pretty amazing, and I want you to hear it. It's clip three.
I'm not an actor, a singer, or a politician. I'm Herschel Walker. Most of you know me as a football player, but I'm also a father, a man of faith, and a very good judge of character. I've known Donald Trump for 37 years, and I don't mean just casual ran into him from time to time. I'm talking about a deep personal friendship. I watched him as an owner of a professional football team. Right after he bought the team, he set out to learn. He learned about the history of the team, the players, the coaches, every detail. Then he used what he learned to make the team better. I watched him in the boardroom. He can be in the middle of a big meeting, but if one of the kids was on the phone, he dropped everything to take the call. He taught me that the family should be your top priority. I watch him treat janitors, security guards, and waiters the same way he would treat a VIP. He made them feel special because he knew they were. He understands that they are the people who make this country run. They clean, they cook, they build, they drive, they deliver. He told me, Herschel, make an effort to get to know people. Remember their names. That stuck with me. One time, I planned to take his kids to Disney World with my family. At the last minute, Donald said he'd like to join us. So there he was, in a business suit, on the It's a Small World ride. That was something to see. It just shows you what a caring, loving father he is. It hurt my soul to hear the terrible names that people call Donald. The worst one is racist. I take it as a personal insult that people would think I've had a 37-year friendship with a racist. People who think that don't know what they're talking about. Growing up in the Deep South, I've seen racism up close. I know what it is, and it isn't Donald Trump. Just because someone loves and respects the flag, our national anthem, and our country, doesn't mean they don't care about social justice. I care about all those things. So does Donald Trump. He shows how much he cares about social justice in the black community through his actions. and his action speaks louder than stickers or slogans on a jersey. He keeps right on fighting to improve the lives of Black Americans and all Americans. He worked night and day. He never stops. He leaves nothing on the field. Some people don't like his style, the way he knocks down obstacles that get in the way of his goals. People on the opposing team didn't like when I ran over them either. But that's how you get the job done. I pray every night that God gives him more time. Give him 4 more years. He has accomplished so much almost all by himself on a constant attack. But there's still more work to be done. If you love America and want to make it better, Donald Trump is your president. He's my president. And I'm blessed to call him friend.
All right, so that was Herschel Walker, 3-time winner of the Heisman Trophy, speaking from his heart, and I think that's the thing that struck me about all of these stories that were shared last night with people who were speaking from their heart. I want you to hear one from, we just barely have time. Natalie Harp, totally different situation. Her life was spared by a program that the president instituted. We may run over the break a little bit, you guys, but this is clip 4. Let's listen to Natalie Harp.
Good evening. I'm Natalie Harp, a formerly forgotten American from California. In the classic Jimmy Stewart film, It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey is given a great gift, the chance to see what the world would be like without him. Tonight, Mr. President, we'd like to give you that same gift, because without you, we'd all be living in Pottersville, sold out to a crooked Mr., or I should say, a crooked Mrs. Potter, with no hope of escape except death itself. I should know. Because I wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for you. About 5 years ago, I was the victim of a notoriously deadly medical error. I survived, but only to be diagnosed with a rare and terminal bone cancer. You know, the Democrats love to talk about healthcare being a human right. But a right to what? Well, I'll tell you. To them, it's a right to marijuana, opioids, and the right to die with dignity. A politically correct way of saying assisted suicide. I was told I was a burden to my family and to my country, and that by choosing to die early, I'd actually be saving the lives of others by preserving resources for them rather than wasting them on a lost cause like myself. And when I failed the chemotherapies that were on the market, no one wanted me in their clinical trials. I'd make them look bad. They didn't give me the right to try experimental treatments, Mr. President. You did. And without you, I'd have died waiting for them to be approved. Now, with the coronavirus, everyone knows what that feels like to be waiting for a cure. But we've only been waiting a few months. Just imagine what 2020 would have looked like, fighting for your life, without Donald Trump fighting for it too. In January, there would have been no China travel ban. Millions would have died. Millions more would have been infected, for there'd be no record levels of testing. No right to try treatments, no fast track for a vaccine, nor Operation Warp Speed ready to deliver it. And without Donald Trump as our patient advocate for the past 4 years, well, the opioid epidemic would have stolen even more lives from even more families. Kidney patients would have no future except dying on wait lists, for there'd be no initiative to increase donations. There'd still be no accountability at the VA. And our brave veterans would still be suffering long wait times with no choice nor access to faster care. Insulin and other drug prices would have continued to rise, while a record number of generic drugs would still be stuck in the pipeline. There'd be no price transparency. We wouldn't have health plans up to 60% cheaper than Obamacare, and we'd still be stuck with that infamous individual mandate. And God forbid what the next 4 years would look like. For in Joe Biden's America, China would control our drug production. We'd be one step closer to government-run healthcare. We wouldn't just be unable to keep our doctors. We'd be lucky if we could see any doctor. And even then, some of us would be denied care. For in socialized medicine, you don't beat the odds, you become the odds. And I would lose my right to try, just like Charlie Gard, that terminally ill British baby whose government-run healthcare system decided it was too expensive and too cruel to keep him alive. You see, Mr. President, you've done so much more than your promises made and promises kept. For numbers only tell part of the story. We are the rest of it. Facts with faces of Americans who would still be forgotten if you and our favorite First Lady hadn't given up your own wonderful life so we could have the chance at one. George Bailey's father was right. All you can take with you is that which you've given away. And Mr. President, that makes you the richest man in the world, for you have used your strength to make America strong again. Sacrificed the life you built to make America proud again. And you risked everything to make America safe again. It's a wonderful life. You made America great again. And on November 3rd, we are going to keep America great.
That's Natalie Harp. And again, she's talking about Right to Try. That is, you guys can run the bumper. That was signed on May 30th of 2018. Right to Try was the lifting of, like if you were dying, you were diagnosed, you were going to die. You could try an experimental medication without some approval by the FDA. That's what she's talking about. The other thing she mentioned that's so important and so true is that we found out through this crisis that China is making our drugs. China, we've shipped out almost all of our manufacturing of our drugs to China. And so President Trump is bringing that back, commissioning various organizations here to start, you know, creating, you know, making our antibiotics, our pain relievers, all of that stuff. And so those two things are the things, a couple of things that she alluded to. But the passion with which she spoke cannot be manufactured, bottled. It's nothing that you can contrive. That was Natalie in her own words, and I wanted you to hear it. There's more after this. It really was an amazing night. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs. And because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Dan Scavino, White House Director of Social Media and Assistant to the President. Mr. Scavino manages social media accounts for the president while supporting the president's work in conjunction with White House staff. Proverbs 25:11 reminds us of the importance of effective communication. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Dan Scavino as he assists our president. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Anti-police violence escalated over the weekend across the Fruited Plain in Portland, Oregon. An angry mob threw balloons filled with human waste at officers. In Kenosha, Wisconsin, protesters clashed with police, burning cars and dump trucks. At one point, an officer was smashed in the head with a brick. The officer fell unconscious to the ground. The violence in response to an officer-involved shooting of a black man. Progressives have made a serious political miscalculation with Black Lives Matter and Antifa. They seem to believe that a majority of Americans support this sort of lawlessness. But in reality, neither blacks nor whites want their neighborhoods turned into war zones. They want to live in communities where their kids can play in the parks and people can go to the Piggly Wiggly without having to wear a Kevlar vest. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download my free podcast at toddstarns.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
My name is Kim Plasek, and I'm running for Congress in Maryland's 7th District. And like Shirley Chisholm, I'm unbought and unbossed. Let me remind you, the Democrats have controlled this part of Baltimore City for over 50 years. And they have run this beautiful place right into the ground. Abandoned buildings, liquor stores on every corner, drug addicts, guns on the street, that's now the norm in many neighborhoods. You'd think Maryland taxpayers would be getting a whole lot since our taxes are out of control. Instead, we're paying for decades of incompetence and corruption. Sadly, the same cycle of decay exists in many of America's Democrat-run cities. And yet the Democrats still assume that black people will vote for them, no matter how much they let us down and take us for granted. We're sick of it. We're not going to take it anymore. The days of blindly supporting the Democrats are coming to an end. In Baltimore, we have the highest number of black Republicans in the entire country running for office this election cycle. Joe Biden believes we can't think for ourselves, that the color of someone's skin dictates their political views. We're not buying the lies anymore. You and your party have neglected us for far too long. We want safety in our neighborhoods. We want to make the most of the federal opportunity zone I'm standing in right now in West Baltimore. We want higher paying jobs and more business opportunities. We want lower taxes. We want school choice. We want a chance to get ahead, not just get by. That's what President Trump promised, and that's what President Trump delivered. I want Baltimore to be an example to Republicans around the country that we can compete in our inner cities if we reach out to the citizens and deliver real results. President Trump is bringing this country back roaring. He's bringing the American spirit to life for all Americans. So I'm asking you to help President Trump complete this great American comeback. And then I'm asking you to help me start this great Baltimore comeback. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, that was last night. That was Kim Klasick. Kim, a beautiful girl. She's got this great ad where she's walking through the ruins of Baltimore and saying much the same, only much more, well, even more passionately. And so she was represented last night, or presented last night. There were a lot of like we have to talk about race, but honestly, it's race the way it should be discussed, where you don't notice they're just Americans. But part of their story is because of their color. Kim's is, she just talked about how, you know, the expectation is that black Americans are going to support Democrats. And she said that's over with, because they've ruined our cities, they've ruined our opportunities, and that's it. Herschel Walker has said the same thing. Tim Scott spoke last night, the Senator Tim Scott. He talked about how his family had moved from the cotton to the halls of Congress in one generation. Very moving speech. Vernon Jones, who is a Democrat from Georgia, Atlanta area. I told you I met Vernon just a few weeks ago at the Trump Hotel in D.C. And I played a clip of him on MSNBC probably 3 weeks ago that was just so powerful. He spoke last night and talked about much the same thing. So things are changing. They are shifting. But lots of testimonies last night. And one of them I want to share with you is from Andrew Pollack. You've probably seen Andrew on television before. He's very articulate. His daughter, Meadow, was killed at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And he was very his response to her death was a contrast to the others. And last night he spoke at the convention, and I want you to hear just from his heart what he had to say. Andrew Pollack.
In 2018, a gunman walked into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and changed my life forever. My name is Andrew Pollack. His name isn't worth saying. One of the seniors walking in the hallways that day was my beautiful daughter, Meadow. She was just months away from graduating and beginning a new life. We were so proud of the woman she had become. But in the hallway on that third floor, the gunman saw Meadow and shot her down the hallway, hitting her 4 times. After she was shot and on the floor, She crawled over to another student, a freshman girl, to protect her. She draped her body over her, and then the gunman shot my daughter at point-blank range 5 more times, killing Meadow and the girl she was shielding. She had a whole life ahead of her, and in that life, she could have done anything and been anything. So many moments that I waited so long for were taken from me. I didn't get to drop her off at college. I didn't get to walk her down the aisle. But every moment was taken from her, and for what? I never wanted this to become a political spectacle, but it did. I never wanted to meet the president like this, but I did. I was invited to the White House. The truth is, I had just buried my daughter that week. I really wasn't interested in public events like a tour or a photo op. I was interested in answers and solutions. So if the president wanted to meet me personally, I said I'd go. They said, of course, that was his plan. At the White House, my family and I sat with the president in the Oval Office and told him about Meadow. I told him what we knew. I told him that his administration needed to take a closer look at what went wrong and why. And I got to see who President Trump really is. He's a good man and a great listener, and he cuts through the BS. Then the president did what he said he would do. He took action. He formed a school safety commission that issued dozens of recommendations to make schools safer. But I'll bet you never heard about that. Instead, the media turned my daughter's murder into a coordinated attack on President Trump, Republicans, and our Second Amendment. In fact, when President Trump asked me and other parents of children that were murdered in school shootings to join him as he announced the commission's findings, the media's first question wasn't about protecting kids. Shockingly, they asked about the government shutdown. President Trump turned to me, appalled, and said, "Andy, can you believe these people? We're trying to talk about school safety, and this is what they do." But I could believe it. After my daughter's murder, the media didn't seem interested in the facts. So I found them myself. I learned that gun control laws didn't fail my daughter. People did. The gunman had threatened to kill his classmates before. He had threatened to rape them. He had threatened to shoot up the school. Every red flag you could imagine. But the school didn't just miss these red flags. They knowingly ignored them. Far-left Democrats in our school district made this shooting possible because they implemented something they called restorative justice. This policy, which really just blames teachers for students' failures, puts kids and teachers at risk and makes shootings more likely. But it was billed as a pioneering approach to discipline and safety. I was just fine with the old approach to discipline and safety. It was called discipline and safety. But the Obama-Biden administration took Parkland's bad policies and forced them into schools across America. When President Trump rescinded Obama's guidance on restorative justice policies, he put an end to that. And that meant the world to me. It's hard to tell how much Mr. Biden understands about what happened at Parkland. Mr. Biden has campaigned on bringing back restorative justice as part of his unity platform with Bernie Sanders and has pledged to implement in school districts across America. But he doesn't even seem to know when the shooting happened. He said that he was vice president when it happened, but he wasn't. Mr. Biden may not know when my daughter was murdered, but I do. February 14, 2018. Mr. Biden may not know that these policies make shootings more likely, but I do. Mr. Biden may not know who was vice president that day, but I do. It wasn't Joe Biden. It was Mike Pence. Thank God. And I know who the president was, too. It wasn't Barack Obama. It was President Donald J. Trump. And he took action. I truly believe the safety of our kids depends on whether this man is reelected. I hope you'll join me in helping to make that happen. Mr. President, myself and millions of Americans appreciate you and love you. God bless America, and God bless our president, Donald J. Trump.
All right, that was Andrew Pollack. And of course, he's right about that. The Obama administration, along with the education secretary at the time, Arne Duncan, he was from Chicago. I remember well, trust me. They put in public schools around the country, unbeknownst to us, these restorative justice discipline policies, which meant no discipline. And that's why the shooter at Parkland was allowed to continue in school. That's why he was allowed to get away. They knew he was dangerous. He had such a long record. The school authorities, the police, everyone knew. And yet they allowed him to stay in that school. That was part of the restorative justice policy. Oh, we can't, you know, it's like, think about criminal justice reform in the general population where we're letting prisoners out of jail, where Scott Peterson just got off of the death penalty, even though he brutally murdered and lied about the death of his wife and his child. Restorative justice is, you know, they always call it something positive when in fact it's something that's very dangerous to the lives and safety of other Americans. And that's what they were doing in public schools, and that was contributing to the number of shootings. And so the president did away with that. And that's what he's talking, that's in part what Andrew Pollack is talking about. Last night, I'm going to quickly switch to this. You remember, I've talked quite a bit about the McCloskeys, Patricia and Mark. They're the St. Louis couple who lived in that gated neighborhood in St. Louis, down in the downtown area, but restored this big home, huge home, gated. They're sitting there having dinner. All of a sudden, their gate is broken down, and Black Lives Matter protesters come pouring in, yelling at them. They threaten them. They tell them they're going to come in and take their house. They're going to pick out their own bedrooms. They're threatened to kill them. And so the McCloskeys get their guns and are standing in their lawn trying to defend themselves. And I think you know what happened, but I'll let Mark and Patricia tell their story more fully. They spoke last night. Let's listen.
Good evening, America. We are Mark and Patty McCloskey. We're speaking to you tonight from St. Louis, Missouri, where just weeks ago you may have seen us defending our home as a mob of protesters descended on our neighborhood.
America is such a great country that not only do you have the right to own a gun and use it to defend yourself, but thousands of Americans will offer you free advice on how to use it. At least that's what we experienced. What you saw happen to us could just as easily happen to any of you who are watching from quiet neighborhoods around our country. And that's what we want to speak to you about tonight.
That's exactly right. Whether it's the defunding of police, ending cash bail so criminals can be released back out on the streets the same day to riot again, or encouraging anarchy and chaos on our streets, it seems as if the Democrats no longer view the government's job as protecting honest citizens from criminals, but rather protecting criminals from honest citizens. Not a single person in the out-of-control mob you saw at our house was charged with a crime. But you know who was? We were. They've actually charged us with felonies for daring to defend our home. On top of that, consider this. The Marxist liberal activist leading the mob to our neighborhood stood outside our home with a bullhorn screaming, "You can't stop the revolution." Just weeks later, that same Marxist activist won the Democrat nomination to hold a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. In the city of St. Louis, that's the same as winning the general election. That Marxist revolutionary is now going to be the congresswoman from the 1st District of Missouri. These radicals are not content with marching in the streets. They want to walk the halls of Congress. They want to take over. They want power. This is Joe Biden's party. These are the people who will be in charge of your future and the future of your children.
They're not satisfied with spreading the chaos and violence into our communities. They want to abolish the suburbs altogether by ending single-family home zoning. This forced rezoning would bring crime, lawlessness, and low-quality apartments into now-thriving suburban neighborhoods. President Trump smartly ended this government overreach, but Joe Biden wants to bring it back. These are the policies that are coming to a neighborhood near you. So make no mistake, no matter where you live, your family will not be safe in the radical Democrats' America.
At this moment in history, if you stand up for yourself and for the values our country was founded on, the mob, spurred on by their allies in the media, will try to destroy you. You've seen us on your TV screens and Twitter feeds. You know that we're not the kind of people who back down. Thankfully, neither is Donald Trump. President Trump will defend the God-given right of every American to protect their homes and their families. But more than that, Trump's vision for America is a country where you have an opportunity to work hard and build the life you dream of, with a job you love, with your children being educated in great schools, in a community where your family can play in the backyard without fear, worship in a church without shame, and express your beliefs without retribution. Trump brought us the greatest economy our country had ever seen. The Democrats have brought us nothing but destruction.
When we don't have basic safety and security in our communities, we'll never be free to build a brighter future for ourselves, for our children, or for our country. That's what's at stake in this election, and that's why we must re-elect Donald Trump. God bless you, God bless the president,
and God bless these United States.
Well, Patricia and Mark McCloskey, that really, really was very moving to me. I think, don't you think that we're kind of rediscovering some of the core values that we have taken for granted all of these years? The things that our founding fathers saw, understood, because they had come from other kinds of cultures and lands and kings and monarchies and dictatorships. And they understood the need to install and instill in the writings the kind of freedoms that we have enjoyed, but we have so taken them for granted. And now we're seeing every day in the headlines what it's going to look like when those protections and when those freedoms are lost, and when we've forgotten that those freedoms, they don't come from governments, they don't come from presidents, they come from God. God has made man to be free, but he must self-govern. And so that's the part that is the constant refrain. When we come back, I have more things to play for you. I thought it was a powerful night, and I want you to hear it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You know our country needs prayer. Franklin Graham knows it too.
As I stand in our nation's capital, the only hope for America is God. And on the 26th of September, I'm holding a prayer march. And we're going to go from what's behind me, the Lincoln Memorial, all the way down to the Capitol, praying for our nation.
Make plans to join Franklin Graham September 26th in Washington, D.C. All the details for the prayer march are at billygraham.org. That's billygraham.org.
In Acts chapter 1:8, when he says we're to be witnesses, he says in Jerusalem. Judea, that was the surrounding area. Samaria, oh, now we're getting into a cross culture.
The wrong side of the tracks.
Wrong side of the tracks, wrong people, and to the uttermost parts of the earth.
Exploring Missions with Bert Harper. Saturday evenings at 6:30 Central and Sunday afternoons at 1 on American Family Radio.
That's what he said. You shall be my witnesses.
Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its savor, how will it be seasoned? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Matt Walsh wrote a piece for the Daily Wire where he said, "The contemporary American Christian is the most open-minded person to have ever existed. He's so open-minded, you can hardly tell he's Christian or has a mind at all. He has for a long time been open to the idea that marriage isn't permanent and sex isn't meant exclusively for marriage. He's basically open to whatever notions are popular. He is open. And where he is not open, he is silent."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Hitler's propagandist Joseph Goebbels said, "If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it." The deep state seems to agree with him. They loudly and mindlessly repeat three lies about COVID-19. First, that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work, but it does. It has virtually a 100% cure rate if taken as soon as symptoms appear. The second lie is that masks work, but they don't. Not one clinical study shows they protect against respiratory diseases. The third lie is that lockdowns work, but they don't. New York has the worst per capita rate of COVID deaths in the world, yet they locked down early and hard. Sweden never locked down at all and reached zero deaths at the same time New York did. As Jesus said, it is the truth that will set us free.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last week, a top State Department official took the extraordinary step of warning leaders of academic institutions that there may be, quote, a wholesale delisting, unquote, of Chinese corporations from U.S. capital markets by the end of next year. Undersecretary of State Keith Kroc, who, prior to taking up his present responsibilities, had a successful career in business and in governance in the academy, told the boards of university endowments it would be, quote, prudent to divest from PRC firm stocks, unquote. This message about undisclosed material risks and potential financial losses from investing in Chinese Communist Party companies should be heeded by individual and institutional investors on Wall Street and state public pension funds, too. Secretary Kroc's bottom line is absolutely right and must be heeded now before Americans are subjected to predictable and predicted losses from enabling the CCP's malevolence. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with their allies in the Congress of the United States.
Wow, that was pretty strong language for the Speaker of the House. That's what Nancy Pelosi said in the last 24 hours, that the domestic enemies that we are warned to protect this nation from live at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's the White House, in case you didn't know, and the president's allies in Congress. They are the domestic enemies. I mean, she's that's the strongest language yet I've heard her say. She's calling them, domestic enemies. I think that's pretty much how we view the left. But I've never heard anyone say that so blatantly, certainly not a Speaker of the House. Of course, she's talking about, then she goes on to talk about the post office and blaming the president for what she feels are, you know, but the attempt to steal the elections through manipulating the post office. What she's saying is, what they're accusing the president of is, you know, taking away these mail boxes. They've actually accused the president of doing that. It's just building to some sort of a wild conspiracy, like the Russian hoax, because we know just from the numbers that the post office began removing those boxes at least as early as the Obama administration, removed thousands of them just because people are not using them as much. And it's based on who uses what. So the boxes are not being removed so that you can't vote, or so it's harder to vote. But I want you to hear this kind of report from William Lajeunesse. We talked about the ballots yesterday with Hans von Spakovsky, but William Lajeunesse had a great report on mail-in balloting yesterday, which is what Nancy Pelosi has her ire up about. You know, they want mail-in balloting. Actually, she brought Congress back for a special session on Saturday to vote to give $25 billion to the post office because they want all the employees and members of the post office, they want their votes, for one thing. There are a lot of minorities in the post office, and there are a lot of Democrats who happen to be minorities working in the post office, and they're trying to whip them into a frenzy, and they're trying to whip the rest of the left into a frenzy into believing that the Republicans are trying to take the, you know, obstruct the election through preventing mail-in balloting at the post office. But there's so much more to it. There's so many chances for fraud, so many dangers. William Lajeunesse talks about it a bit. Let's listen to clip 11.
It's going to be a complicated, difficult, and challenging situation.
Remember the hanging Chad fight? Was that a vote or not? Expect a similar battle this year over mail-in ballots. Does the signature match the driver's license? Is there a postmark? When was the ballot mailed? Does the envelope display a complete signature, not initials? And is the ballot ripped or torn?
If every state were to try to switch over right now to vote by mail, it would be extremely challenging.
A survey by National Public Radio found 30 states rejected more than 500,000 mail-in ballots in this year's primary as non-conforming.
You not only have to sign it, but you have to fill in your name, your registered address. They may ask for the last four digits of your Social Security number, etc. And if you don't meet that compliance standard, your ballot's not going to get counted.
Officials in eight battleground states rejected 125,000 ballots. Wisconsin denied as many votes as President Trump's 2016 margin of victory there. In New York's primary, officials rejected 12,000 votes in a congressional race won by fewer than 4,000.
Though we're expanding vote by mail, and that's a very good thing, we need to offer more choices to voters.
Some first-time mail-in voters make innocent mistakes involving envelopes, deadlines, and signatures. And state officials say many don't have the capacity, training, or protocols to handle the volume.
I'm really glad that the president is helping open up these questions so that we can help voters understand the security and the verifiability and the accountability of our system.
For the most part, Republicans want strict rules to limit mail-in voting. Democrats want few constraints, citing studies showing young and minority ballots are more likely to be judged nonconforming. With November's projected margin of victory small in some states, both parties are educating their bases on how to properly fill out a ballot and mail it early.
All right, so did you hear that familiar voice? It was Hans von Spakovsky, our good friend who was just on with us yesterday, talking about the details of filling out the ballot. But anyway, that was a great report from William, and that is the issue. It's a battle line drawn, and that's why Nancy Pelosi is calling President Trump and those that support him enemies of the state, because we want honest voting. We don't want mail-in ballots where they are harvested by others, targeting the elderly, the disabled, people that are afraid to go out, taking their ballots and voting for them, you know, sending ballots indiscriminately to the voter rolls, which have not been cleaned up in years. You remember the president tried to do that through his election commission early on, and the left went crazy. Hans was part of that. Christian was part of that. They blocked them in every way possible for filing lawsuits, and they had to disband. So the voter rolls have not been cleaned up in almost every state. There are some exceptions, but not many. So these ballots go out to just, you know, people that can vote many times, or they're no longer there. So that's nice for the ballot harvesters. They can pick up ballots that are just hanging out and use them. It's just rife with fraud. All right. But that brings me back then to the convention last night, because, by the way, the president was nominated unanimously earlier in the day to be the candidate for the Republicans. So that's kind of an important detail. But last night, a Cuban businessman from Florida spoke, and I found it so moving. He reminded me of my first father-in-law very much. It reminded me of his affect, the way he spoke. And you'll have to listen carefully, because his English, he has a Cuban accent. But it's his perspective of what's going on right now. It's Maximo Alvarez. Here he is, clip 16.
I'm speaking to you today because my family is done abandoning what we rightfully earned. There's no place to hide. I'm speaking to you today because President Trump may not always be politically correct. He's in fact a successful businessman, not your average career politician. Our president is just another family man, a friend, and most important, our elected commander-in-chief who puts America first. Keep in mind, the other guy running for president is mostly concerned about power. Yes, yes, power for them, but not for the benefit of all Americans. I'm speaking to you today because I have seen people like this before. I've seen movements like this before. I've seen ideas like this before. Those false promises, spread the wealth, free education, free health care, defund the police, trust the socialist state more than your family and your community, they don't sound radical to my ears. They sound familiar. And Fidel Castro was asked if he was a communist, he said he was a Roman Catholic. He knew he had to hide the truth. But the country I was born in is gone, totally destroyed. Right now, it is up to us to decide our fate and to choose freedom over oppression. President Trump, he's fighting the forces of anarchy and communism. And I know he will continue to do just that. And what about his opponent and the rest of the D.C. swamp? I have no doubt they will hand the country over to those dangerous forces. You and I will decide.
All right, he's had a lot more to say about that. He talked about, he said there's nowhere else to go. You know, we came here and he's talked about how the emotions when he swore his allegiance to this country and became an American. And he said there's nowhere else to go. And just praying and pleading that people will pay attention and understand what's happening in this country. And so, of course, I've had the benefit of kind of hearing stories from people like that for years. You know, I grew up in the time of the Cold War, and it was a fascinating situation. We knew about Russia. We knew about how they propagandized their children. We couldn't imagine. We knew that they turned their children against their parents. We couldn't imagine it. We knew about Pravda and Radio Moscow, how they were filled with propaganda 24/7, and we couldn't imagine it. And yet, this is what we're seeing. Almost, this is where we are. Almost, this is where we will be if we let the left take power in this country. And I guess, you know, so the question is, what will you do? It is hard to know. I know I say all of these things. I report to you every day. And you say to me, what can I do? Well, there's some practical things. You need to register to vote. Make sure you're voting. Make sure your friends are voting. Make sure your church. You need to bring this information to your pastors. I don't care if they don't want to hear it. They need to hear it. Because we're talking about life and death. We're talking about freedom versus bondage. We're talking about the real lifeblood of the church. I'm not, of course, martyrdom is the lifeblood of the church. the blood of the martyrs is the fruit of the church. But I'm talking about the ability to worship and assemble. I think that they need to understand that the continuing destruction of our economic base will mean churches will not have, you know, there will be no church. Those buildings will be vacant. There will be no staff. Your church staff, including pastors, will be, you know, in the lines of the unemployed, because there will not be enough people to be able to give to you unless you think Amazon's going to donate to your church or Google, because I told you Amazon's profits have gone up 100%. So is Target's. You think Target's going to donate to help your church stay alive? I don't think so. Because they're busy opening up their bathrooms to all genders. That's where their heart and mind is. And yet we've allowed them to stay open and prosper, while many, many, you know, middle American, outside American too. Now, we have a lot of mom and pop businesses in New York and California who have just been devastated. Minority businesses, doesn't matter. And that has been the lifeblood of our country economically. They actually employ more Americans than the big corporations. So we're watching that systematically be destroyed, and don't think it's an accident. It's just not because they're trying to make you safe. Really? You really think they just want you to be safe? No, there's a much bigger goal here, and they're doing very well with it, I have to say, in their long march to the institutions. They're doing very, very well. We have to stop them. So the other thing is to, today, pick up the phone and go be hired as a poll worker, because you can do so much. To make sure that we just told you about that fraud in that county in Detroit, the county that Detroit is in, the fraud of their primary recently was ridiculous. And the only reason we know about it is because there was a poll worker there like you, who's honest and wanted it to be done the right way. And that's how we found out. It's been a disaster, and that's what's going to happen. But you could do something about that. If you would go get hired as a poll worker, just call your election commission in your county. And also, tell your election commission that you want to vote in person. You do not want mail-in balloting in your county or whatever the entity is that puts that in place. Those are three things you can do. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.